Tonight on the Daily Debrief, the jury has the case of an accused drug lord who once tunneled his way out of prison. Plus, a possible guilty plea in the disappearance of a Colorado mom. Also, an admitted meth mommy accused of letting her four-month-old boy die from neglect.
Did you meet up with Cheyenne and have sex with her?
Yes.
It's sex and drugs as experts explain the maggots found on the baby's body.
You know when a kid has a dirty diaper. If you can smell it, the flies can smell it way before you can.
This is the Daily Debrief for Monday, February 4th. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Debrief. I'm Aaron Keller. Imran Ansari is joining us in studio. Nicole DeBoard will be on the line in a moment. An Idaho woman is preparing to plead guilty, sources say, to charges related to the disappearance and presumed death of Colorado fiancé Kelsey Barrett. Barrett disappeared 3 months ago around Thanksgiving of last year. Her husband, Patrick Frazee, faces charges related to her presumed death. Now, a woman named Crystal Lee of Idaho is scheduled to appear in court in Colorado. Law enforcement sources tell ABC News that Lee is suspected of driving Barrett's phone to Idaho in an attempt to get rid of it. ABC News is also citing family sources who say Lee will plead guilty to charges related to the case. Prosecutors will not go into detail, saying only the case is sealed. Lee's exact relationship to Frazee isn't known. Investigators tracked Barrett's phone signal to Idaho, however, shortly after her disappearance. Deliberations are underway in the federal case of an accused drug kingpin. Joaquin Guzman, better known as El Chapo, is accused of transporting drugs through the United States, paying off police, and using violence to run his cartel. El Chapo escaped from a cell in a prison in Mexico. Authorities later caught him and brought him here to face charges. 56 witnesses testified in the 10-week trial. The evidence included intercepted recordings of the defendant himself. There are no cameras in federal court, but we are watching the situation for a verdict, which could come any time. Now to the case of an admitted meth mommy accused of endangering her newborn baby to the point the baby died. Prosecutors say four-month-old Zachary Cohen died in a child swing because his mother, Cheyenne Harris, and his father, Zachary Cohen, stopped feeding him and left him to rot in his own feces. Harris was the little boy's stay-at-home caretaker. Prosecutors are trying her under an Iowa law which makes it murder to endanger the life of a baby to the point the baby dies. Prosecutors presented gruesome photos of the maggot-infested baby's corpse. Harris here could barely look. Her attorney, seated at center, did not appear to be happy either. Arms crossed, her back partially turned to her own client. What message is this body language sending to the jury? Testimony in this case is on hold until tomorrow. One of the key witnesses thus far, however, was a friend of the father's who said he used drugs with the mother. But that's not all. Their relationship grew. Let's start with this.
Did you use meth with Miss Harris, the defendant, at that apartment the three times you were there?
No.
How many times did you use meth with her at the apartment?
Once for sure, possibly twice. I can't remember exactly.
Was that the only drug that you observed Miss Harris using at the apartment?
Yes.
And is the only location in that apartment where you smoked the methamphetamine in the bedroom shared by the defendant and Mr. Cohen?
Yes.
When you said you went to the apartment and you used drugs, you said that there were some drugs already in the apartment that you used, and maybe one time you brought drugs, correct?
Correct.
Do you know how Mr. Cohen and Ms. Harris got the methamphetamines that they used?
No.
Do you know how they paid for the drugs that they were using?
No, I do not.
Did you get methamphetamine from Mr. Cohen?
At times, yes.
Did he pay you?
At times, yes.
The same witness testified that he didn't even know Cheyenne Harris and Zachary Cohen had a newborn baby together. He did, however, know that Cohen and Harris's older child was happy and healthy.
When you were in that apartment, did you know there was a baby in that apartment?
No.
Did you ever see the door to that back bedroom open where the not the parents' bedroom, but the other door?
Not that I can recall.
when you were at that apartment, did Ms. Harris ever mention that there was a baby in that apartment?
Not that I recall 100%.
Did you ever see a baby in that apartment?
No.
Did you ever see anybody go in the back room and check on the baby?
I can't say for certain, but not that I can recall.
Did Nala appear healthy?
Yes.
Did she appear happy?
Yes.
Did she appear to be well nourished?
Yes.
And you said you saw Cheyenne actually prepare food and give it to Nala?
Yes.
Did Nala appear to be well nourished?
Yes.
Was she clean?
Yeah.
Properly clothed?
Yes.
Okay, why was all of this happening? Why was this admitted meth mommy caring for one child and not the other? Maybe, just maybe, it was because she was attracted to the man with whom she was doing drugs. Prosecutors made the embarrassing link.
Did you have any type of romantic relationship with defendant Cheyenne Harris?
No.
After Sterling died, did you develop a relationship with her?
Yes.
How did that happen?
Just from texting back and forth, kind of. One thing led to another.
When did it happen?
Probably mid-September.
And was Ms. Harris still together with Mr. Cohn?
I believe so, yes.
Did you meet up with Cheyenne and have sex with her?
Yes.
More than once?
Yes.
Did Mr. Cohn know about it?
After the fact, yes, I believe so.
Did she make efforts to hide it from him before he found out?
I think so, yes.
How did he find out, Mr. Cohn?
I'm not sure.
After he found out, did he and Ms. Harris stay together?
I believe somewhat, yes.
Now, to be clear, your relationship with Ms. Harris continues to right now, right?
Yes.
How would you describe your current relationship with Ms. Harris?
Essentially the same as it was. Kind of much as it can be, I should say.
Now, you write and text her, right?
Correct.
Do you tell her in your writings and texts that you love her?
Yes.
Do you tell her that you want to be with her?
Yes.
Does she say that she loves you?
Yes.
And she wants to be with you?
Yes.
Do you exchange sexually explicit text messages with her?
Sustained.
The judge cut that off right there. Also on the stand last week was a Child Protective Services caseworker. She testified that the defendant admitted using drugs, including methamphetamine.
Did you inquire as to Ms. Harris's mental health needs?
Yes, I screened that when I asked the questions.
What do you mean you screened that?
We talk about any diagnoses that they have, any concerns that they have with their mental health, or any medications that they may be taking.
Did she express to you or claim that she had any current symptoms of depression when you met with her on September 1st, 2017?
I don't recall her identifying specific symptoms, although her making a statement that she had depression.
And when she reported having a history of depression, did she say when that had occurred?
No, she did not.
When you screened Ms. Harris for her use of illegal drugs, did you ask her about her illegal drug use?
Yes, I did.
And what was her response?
It was learned through the interview that she used methamphetamine approximately 1 week before Sterling's death.
And the 1 week before Sterling's death time frame for using methamphetamines, who provided that time frame?
I believe Cheyenne did.
And did she tell you how it was that she ingested the methamphetamine?
I believe this discussion was that she had smoked it.
Okay, that's not all. The defendant herself further admitted drug use in a recorded police interview.
Any self-medication like marijuana, methamphetamine, anything like that?
I did.
Okay. Honestly, I didn't. Before I met Zach, I was really, really hard in the pot.
Okay.
But when I met Zach, he opened my eyes to the fact that I was just making my depression worse.
Okay.
And then I have tried methamphetamine. But
like, how long ago was that?
Really not that long ago. Within the time that I've had Sterling.
Okay. Okay. Is there any meth at the house?
No.
How did you try it?
Smoked it.
Give me a ballpark of the last time that you were there. Smoked meth.
It hasn't been in months.
Oh, no, no, I'm not saying that for...
No, I mean, since we moved to...
Okay, sure.
That's part of the reason we got away from high school is because we knew too many people.
Let's summarize here. The mother's doing drugs, leaving the baby to die in a puddle of his own feces, then starts having sex with the baby's father's druggy friend behind the father's back. Attorneys Nicole DeBord and Imran Ansari are with me tonight here on The Debrief. Imran, let me start with you. Why do you think prosecutors put in that evidence of the mother starting a relationship with the drug buddy?
Well, you know, I think it's showing a possible other motive here. You know, did she have a motive to maybe hide this baby? You know, he testified that he did not know that there was a baby even in the next room. Was there another motive to hide this baby, to carry on this illicit affair with this drug dealer? We don't know, but I just don't think that we have enough to have the diminished capacity intoxication defense that the prosecution, or the defense rather, is going for.
Exactly. Okay, Nicole, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that he's exactly right. And this is a question of showing that, A, she's just too busy to deal with the child and that she's interested in doing other things. It's really not a matter of incapacity as much as it's just a desire not to do her job as a mother.
Okay, trial is law, but trial is also theater. Let's look at this body language again. We saw this last week. We've got to take another look at it. These images of the defense attorney with arms crossed, back partially turned to her own client, the client not looking as though she's having her best day on the planet right there. Nicole, the body language. What do you make of that?
Right. I noticed that right away during some of the first clips we watched of this trial. And it is just terrible. It demonstrates that she does not care for her client, that she herself doesn't care about the things that her client feels, says, or believes. So why should the jury care about her client? And it's something that as a defense attorney, you have to do a much better job of controlling in the courtroom.
Wow, harsh words there, Nicole. I appreciate your perspective on this. Imran, yours as well. Let's move along now. Testimony in this case late last week included these words from experts tasked with the difficult and gruesome job of examining the infant boy's remains.
So with the full rider, you would say he could have been dead for up to 8 hours?
Yes.
You didn't see any of that bloating and things like that, but we've heard testimony about maggots, and I think a lot of people, when they hear maggots, you think of something dead.
Yes.
So how do you explain that?
So, yes, typically we quite often in our office have bodies that come to our office, and we observe maggots on the body, and the bodies at that time are in a moderate stage of decomposition, so they're really darkened, they're bloating. So oftentimes the person isn't even recognizable because they're in that stage of decomposition. That was not the case with Sterling. So maggots are usually going to occur when flies identify dead tissue. So there was, you had feces, which it's possible that that could have attracted flies. And then you also had dead tissue around the diaper area, and maggots can also feed on dead tissue as well.
Another expert talked about the maggots found in the baby's diaper.
The feces, urine soaking, and then that kind of an extreme diaper rash could have been attractive. Any of the three could have been an attraction to those flies, and they're going to try to gain access. For the flies to lay eggs, they have to be able to get to it because they're not just going to dump out eggs somewhere and hope that their maggots crawl to it. So there's going to be a period of time where the flies are crawling into the area trying to get access to that diaper area.
How long would Sterling have needed to be in that dirty diaper before that attraction started?
Well, the attraction can certainly start right away. Because anybody who's ever been around little kids, you know when a kid has a dirty diaper. If you can smell it, the flies can smell it way before you can. And so that would be enough of an attraction for the flies to say, hey, there's a spot I can lay eggs. But for the flies to actually get to that area would have taken some more time. Diapers, of course, are designed to keep all of that stuff in, right? That's why we buy diapers. And so that's gonna provide a pretty extreme barrier for the flies to gain access, and it's gonna take them some time to defeat those barriers.
And how do they do that?
Well, they can certainly smell it, and then once they can smell that attraction, they look for just about any way they can to get into there.
Testimony in the Cheyenne Harris case resumes tomorrow with the defense case in chief. Still ahead tonight here on the Daily Debrief, an MMA fighter escapes from police custody, plus the Super Bowl, America's greatest television event. But is it also a venue for sex trafficking? Do the numbers match the rumors, the hype? That is after the break when the debrief continues. Welcome back to the debrief, everybody. A mixed martial arts fighter is back in custody after escaping while his guards were on a fast food break, of all things. 44-year-old Cedric Marks took off his shirt and ran away from a McDonald's in a city about 45 minutes north of Houston, Texas. It took a manhunt launched by, get this, 17 government agencies to actually track him down. Authorities were moving him from Michigan to Texas. He may face charges in the deaths of his ex-girlfriend and her friend. A North Carolina oral surgeon is under arrest on charges he sexually abused at least four women while they were under anesthesia. Prosecutors charged 55-year-old Michael Lee Hassan with one count of forcible sex and three counts of sexual battery. The patients, authorities say, were between 17 and 21. A judge originally set a $1.25 million bond, but an appeals judge knocked it down to $600,000. If the doctor gets out of jail pending trial, he will be allowed to practice medicine again, but only if he's not alone with patients. An event as big as the Super Bowl carries obvious security concerns, but one claim that's made headlines over recent years is that the event, the Super Bowl, is a home to sex trafficking. Law and Crime editor Colin Kalmbacher, himself an attorney, tried to find out if there was any truth behind the rumor. He joins us now on the debrief. Colin, so what's the rumor, and do the statistics match up with what people are saying?
So the rumor has existed in some form since, I believe, the early 2000s. It's originally attributed to, I believe, when Greece hosted the Olympics. And this was essentially a rumor that got started because of Greece's permissive attitude towards sex work. So essentially the rumor relies upon the idea that there's going to be thousands of out-of-towners. A lot of these out-of-towners are going to be wealthy, and they're probably going to be wealthy men who are trying to purchase sex.
So that's the rumor. Do the numbers actually match up with it? Is this in any way true?
It's almost completely fabricated. The fact is that in most of these cities that host the Super Bowl, law enforcement agencies will tend to kind of feed into the rumor, as will local journalists who are kind of relying upon the word of these law enforcement agencies. And so what the law enforcement agencies will do is they'll devote massive amounts of workforce hours and possibly millions of dollars toward rounding up as many street prostitutes as possible. But even that, you know, sometimes they get a few more than usual, but sometimes even that doesn't work. They've wasted taxpayer money, and they've wasted time when they could be solving actual crimes. A survey of the data by one of the largest anti-trafficking organizations in the world found that Phoenix had about four or so additional arrests, more than the average for street prostitution whenever they hosted the Super Bowl. Another city had somewhere around seven more arrests than average.
So the numbers tell a very different story than the rumors. Colin, you've got a great piece up with a lot of words from a lot of experts on lawandcrime.com. I encourage the audience to go check it out. Colin, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it.
All right. A preliminary hearing will begin tomorrow for the former college president accused of playing a role in the Larry Nassar sex assault scandal. Luanna Simon faces charges that she lied to investigators about her knowledge of the accusations against Nassar at Michigan State University. A hearing will allow a judge to determine if prosecutors have enough evidence to move the case forward. Nassar himself pleaded guilty to federal and state sexual abuse charges after more than 100 gymnasts came forward against Nassar. Testimony is on hold in a California death penalty case we're following here on the Law and Crime Network. Defendant Charles Merritt is accused of killing all four members of the McStay family. He was a business associate to father and husband Joseph McStay. First, the McStays disappeared. Then, authorities believe they may have fled to Mexico to avoid debts. Authorities even pointed to video shot near the border that we showed right there. But then authorities backtracked. It turned out the entire McStay family was buried in the Mojave Desert. Prosecutors claim the defendant killed for money. This case resumes on Wednesday after a several-day break. Very quickly here, Nicole DeBoard, Imran Ansari. A tough case because prosecutors have a lot of circumstantial evidence. Nicole, it's business records. It's bits and pieces of fabric, trying to link the home of the victims up with the graves. Any sense of whether or not the state is getting close to actually implicating the defendant directly?
I think it's a tough case for the state, and they've really made, a tough decision in trying to stick with the idea that these killings took place in the house and that there's been some mysterious cleaning up or repainting of all of the blood. I think that that was some sort of, an unnecessary additional thing that they've now burdened themselves with having to prove.
I agree, Imran. You might as well. I'd love to ask you about it, but we're just about out of time here on The Debrief. A lot to come ahead in that case against Chase Merritt in California. Appreciate the panel joining me tonight. And of course, a reminder that we will be back here on the Daily Debrief, either at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock on the Law and Crime Network. Our schedule here on the Debrief depends on testimony in the McStay family murder case. Since that case is on hold tomorrow, we know we'll see you here tomorrow at 5. But the rest of the week, watch out, we might be on at 4. And of course, you can catch us online. Live trial coverage resumes tomorrow at 9 o'clock Eastern. We'll see you then. Have a good night, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.